welcome to Dogs Are Smarter Than People, the podcast that is weird, but helpful.
Just like it's helpful.
Us in real life. I'm Carrie Jones. I'm an internationally best-selling novelist and reporter, and now a podcaster. And with me, as always, is my husband, Sean Kelly Farrar. What are you, Shawnee?
A man with three names, apparently.
And that means you're going to be a murderer soon, probably.
Oh, that's right.
But every podcast, we do a random thought, and then we give you a little life help. Maybe.
Usually based on a dog's advice.
And then a dog tip, right. And it's all meant to be good happiness, man.
Just fun.
So chill back, relax, and maybe you'll learn something.
Or maybe you'll laugh.
Or maybe even both.
Welcome ever.
We just watched a local debate, so I'm a little punchy. It's a local debate for our town council.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not our random thought. Our random thought is not about politics. Our random thought is about the ultimate bro from Idaho.
Yeah.
And this ultimate bro caught 81 tennis balls with a boxing glove.
What does that mean?
He did it in 1 minute, and they threw tennis balls at him. And he caught them all. Well, he got 84 of them.
Yeah.
Which was 10 more than the Guinness Book of World Records.
Why does it say 81 in the headline?
Oh, I'm sorry, because I screw up numbers. It's 81.
No, it does say 84.
Oh, I don't know, man. He caught a lot of them. And if the news can't, if the facts of the article by Ben Hooper says 81 in the headline and 84 in the lead sentence of the story, well, you know what? It's alternative facts. And that's okay. It was over 80.
It was.
The best part about this, which I feel like is like the ultimate bro Guinness Book of World Records, is like, I'm going to catch. See how many catches I can make of tennis balls in a minute, but I'm going to do it with a boxing glove.
Yeah, I know.
It's so bro.
Started in some stoner's basement.
It's amazing. And I feel like a lot of Guinness Book World Records
do. Oh, I'm sure they have.
Like, the longest fingernails.
Yep.
Happened in a basement.
There's just bad dares and bets come badder.
And I feel like a lot of them may have started off when people were stoned. Like, how many people can we get to kiss at one time, man? Dude, that'd be awesome.
How many can we fit in the Volkswagen?
Yeah, like, you know, just the like, whole Guinness Book of World Records seems like just a big stoner Bible.
For the most, well.
Yeah, I know it is.
Some of those records probably don't fit the stoner guild guy. Mold, whatever.
If you had to do a Guinness Book of World Records, like, what would the record you would want to break be?
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
Come on, improv it, babe. What would it be? I would like to have
living the longest, healthiest, happiest life. Oh, boy. Well, that wasn't my first one.
I would like to see how many puppies I could hug in a minute.
You'd probably be the all-time record holder for
or
that.
Or the problem would be I would hug one puppy and I
not
wouldn't
be able to let go.
Yes.
So you could have the record for the least amount of puppies.
It's all about the love, man. Cursor. Well, that seems so naughty.
If you want to make it naughty, I'll tell you that you get a small cursor.
Okay. Anyways, this podcast is not about the size of my cursor. It is, which really is just the man who swears in my life, which is you, and you're a mighty big cursor. But
long cursor.
It's about texture, and our podcast is called For Texture or Worse.
Jeez, I'm gross.
Americans are weird about food.
Oh, texture definitely plays a lot in food.
I know it does.
Is this podcast about food?
It's about food texture, boo.
It's not about self-improvement?
It is about self-improvement.
Oh. Okay, let's do it.
All right, so there was a recent New York Times article by Ligaya Michon about how Americans like you and me have a lack of texture understanding when it comes to food.
Well, I would like to tell this person something. She's wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Captain, I don't like okra because?
Because I have an exceptional understanding of texture.
And why don't you like tomatoes?
Same reason.
And why don't you like cooked spinach?
Same, well, similar reason. Right. But it all revolves around my outstanding understanding of texture.
No, you're squeamish. You're like a little baby. You're all squeamish about the texture, boo.
Yeah, right. I ate a pig's ass.
And it was still alive. So anyways.
It wasn't the texture that got me on that one.
So wrong. All right, so she writes about the texture of a jellyfish when you eat it. It's quite poetic. Ready?
Yeah.
She says, this is a different crunch than you get from sinking your teeth into walnuts, say, or lacy rounds of lotus root tumbled in a wok, or the golden tips of a croissant, or sugar torched in a glacine pane atop creme brulee. And yet, an English speaker must flounder for words to delineate their textures. Beyond crunchy, which some etymologists date back to the late 19th century, and crispy from crisp, which originally meant curly, but came to signify brittle in the 16th century, other languages are more bountiful. So what she's saying there, in a very eloquent way, is that our language just sucks when it comes to describing food texture. It's like crunchy, crisp, soggy, brittle, maybe, firm, tender.
Butter.
Crispy, right? I don't know if buttery is. Silky works. But, like, if you think about Japan, there are more than 400 words, like texture terms, just for food in the Japanese language.
Yeah.
400. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's like Aleutians with snow, right? And like,
now, so are all Japanese children made to learn these 400 words?
I think they just learn them. It's just part of their culture, right? And like for our language, English, it's not. And it's really interesting to me how
I can't imagine we have 400 words to describe anything. I'm sorry.
Well.
Huh?
We do to describe a husband's interruptosaurus. She also writes, a roughly strip of well-seethed bacon delivers a crisp crack. I'm sorry, a clean crack that in Japan is called kari kari as opposed to shaki shaki, which is a gushy bite, like an apple right off the try. The tree, right? And taku taku is a fracture cushioned by richness, like when you bite into a buttery cookie or pork skins that have been dropped in hot oil, and then in the oil they expand like clouds. And gari gari in Japanese means a hard crunch like ice that taxes the jaw. And bari bari is a kind of delicious shattering, or I'm sorry, a delicate yet delicious shattering epitomized by a rice cracker, and pari pari, the even more evanescent shattering achieved by sheerest cut potato chips. So you see, that's a lot more than we got, right?
No.
Oh, God, you're so contrarian.
I wasn't being contrarian.
You just said no. How is no not contrarian?
Because she didn't repeat herself one time when she used English words to describe the Japanese words.
Look at all the words she had to use.
It doesn't matter.
A fracture cushioned by richness as found in buttery cookies. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of words.
She's... No, never mind.
All right.
I'm not going to say.
No, because you're just being contrarian.
No, it's not about that.
Because you're all America. America! Right? Yeah. Right? Yeah. Okay. So it's more than that, right? She also says, not only does English lack a robust vocabulary for food textures, but whether as a corollary or a coincidence, English speakers also tend to value a narrower range of textures. There have always been differences in what people of different regions eat based on the flora and fauna, supported by local climate and geography. Europe, to which a majority of Americans trace their heritage, is far less biodiverse than Asia and Africa and South America. And there, texture is celebrated, right? But here, it's like not celebrated so much. And I think that's really interesting. Okay, he's just looking at me, everybody, since you can't see his creamy face.
I didn't want to interrupt, for sure. I'm sorry. I was just waiting to make sure you were done.
I was done.
Okay.
You have thoughts?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
That
I'm the best wifey ever.
You are the best wife ever.
You're so lucky.
Why am I lucky? I am lucky. But why am I lucky? But why are you telling me I'm lucky right now?
I just wanted you to be nice.
Can you go back to the top of our article here?
Yes. It's not an article, it's my post, but yeah. And what do you want to talk about from the top of this article?
I
want to
know what she said.
About?
We just lack a texture understanding when it comes to food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, anyways, there's an interesting aspect to here, because you're not chiming in yet.
I'm not what?
Chiming in. And this is my favorite part of her article, because it's the most interesting to me,
yeah.
I think. She says, traditionally, those at the top of the hierarchy had the most wide-ranging diets, including, like, you know, in history and region. And that included ingredients that were difficult to procure, sometimes from the ends of the empire, and thus expensive. And it became a way to show that you had status or privilege, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when industrialization happened in England in the middle of the 18th century, like, diners and where their food was coming from, like that interaction changed a bit, right? Because in 1820, she says, farm workers were reported to make up 72% of the American labor force, and now it's just 1% basically.
Yeah, because of machines.
Right. And so we got separated from where our food came from, and that became an estrangement, right?
Yes.
And then after World War II, all the processed food and the prepackaged food became like the norm in America, right?
Yep.
And in that food, like, there wasn't any fuss, it wasn't any like complexity, like, it was easy to cook, right? You didn't have to like cut apart a chicken and butcher it, or a pig, you know, you didn't like the heart and the kidney and all that stuff is like inside the, like, if it, you get a roast chicken, it's inside it. If you got a prepared food, it's nowhere near you. You know what I mean? Like, and like the food was just there. And she wrote, gone were the textures of resistance, if you will, the messy ones that call to mind a body's murky interior to remind us where the food came from. Which mm-hmm. is so interesting to me, because one of my Grammys was so into that. Like, her favorite thing to do in the whole world was to butcher pig.
Yeah.
Or like to cut apart a lamb, or like to like expertly do that. Because to her, it was like, so lucky to have that meat, because they grew up in the Depression. Well,
she felt blessed. Yeah.
Right, because she was raising children in the Depression. But it was also, like, to her, almost like an art form and a homage to, like, the animal that had died.
Yeah.
Right? And now we're so separated from the truth of where our food even comes from the toil of having it grow from the earth, if it's plants, you know, of painstakingly make sure your pear tree or your apple tree doesn't get like leaf wilt, like, or, you know, if it's meat, like where that meat came from and right. how it was alive, you know, in a thinking being, a sentient being. And to my Grammy Barnard, the act of butchering was almost like a prayer to her, because she felt so lucky to have that food.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought it was so beautiful how, I mean, it sounds kind of gross, and she's dead, so she can't get mad at me about it. But like, she thought it was kind of beautiful, like how the muscles met and the sinew and the, like, the connective tissue. Like, to her, it was this gorgeous, miraculous system. You know what I mean? Like, well, that. It is. Yes, but when she cut apart a chicken, like, even like if you spatchcock a chicken now or something, to her, that was like a step towards understanding that body. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
So this New York Times article writer, reporter, writer, whatever, said that, like, she thinks that our culture is shifting again.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because there's so many trends towards anti-commercialization. Mm-hmm. And so many people want home-cooked meals. And, like, so there's that going on. And to you and I, we're like, oh my God, almost all our meals are home-cooked. But
right.
To other people, we're very lucky that we can do that, right? That we have the time and the talent and the opportunity to do that, right? And the resources. But a lot of people don't. And she also said that it's might be, quote, about cultural capital, where globalization lets us Americans see the whole world of food. And, like, you get to know about it and, like, you get to touch it. And there's, like, sort of that privilege of sorts. If you're someone living all the way in the coast of Maine, like we are, and we're like, oh, wow, check out this kimchi, or, oh, wow, you know, like, taste this sea urchin, or, oh, wow, you know, look at this doll. This is the best doll I've ever had. You know what I mean? Like, it's so lucky that we get to try all these things, including pig's anus. Apparently.
Well, that wasn't here in Bahrain.
No, it was in Boston. But anyways, so she wrote, you know, like, what you once ate as a dare is now, like, a night out.
Right.
And, you know, and that's not for everybody, because some people have really big issues with texture, Sean. But it is also, but it's, and that's okay, too, but it's amazing. And there's even this internet test right now that tells you how fussy you are about food. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you blame texture a little too much.
Oh, on your food. You're the one who said it. For my highly
refined palate. Well, I might have to rethink that because, you know, I love the shit out of oysters.
You do love yourself an oyster.
They're pretty slimy and slippery. But they taste like heaven.
I have a real firm belief about what kind of food it is that you don't like.
What is it?
I think that you don't like things that have an notwithstanding spinach. I think you just don't like the taste of spinach. But okra and tomato both have a skin, a very thin skin, that has kind of like a puncture feel when you get your tooth through it.
Tomato, for sure.
And then once you get to the inner part of it, yeah, like, it's kind of squishier. They both have little seeds in them. They both, like, kind of pop a little bit in your mouth when you break through that skin. He's looking at me.
Oh, that's because I haven't eaten one in so long, I just can't.
But I think that's really the texture you have an issue with.
Yeah.
Like, because you'll eat, like, roe, you'll eat, you know, urchin, you'll eat oysters, you'll eat jellyfish, you'll eat so many, you'll eat chewy sinew, you'll eat pork rinds. Like, but I think it's just that one texture that really gets to you. I may be wrong.
No, I think you're probably right.
But there's also, I wanted before we go to mention, there's a food disgust test.
What do you mean?
It's like a test. It's like a test. And, like, you take it. Yeah. It sounds so stupid. But it's basically like,
you're supposed to say if something seems disgusting to you.
Yeah, it'll be like, if you if you, like, have an apple and the apple has brown on it,
eat it.
Will you eat it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, if it sucks.
It's just a bruise, man. Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. Or it'll be like, if you have, will you ever eat blue cheese? Like that. Look at him not answering.
Oh, I hate blue cheese. No, I would eat blue cheese, like, on a dare, but not just of my own free will. So, no.
And it's like things like, if you saw a caterpillar or a bug on your apple, would you still eat the apple? If there was a worm in your apple, would you eat part of the apple that didn't have the worm in it?
I definitely would not eat the animal on the outside. Well, I probably wouldn't eat the animal on the inside either for the same reason.
No, it's not saying you're eating that worm. You're eating around the worm.
Oh, I do that for sure.
Yeah. But see, I think that part of that food disgust test is really about whether or not you grew up poor.
Well, yeah.
Partially. Like, so for me, like, if we had an apple, like, and there was a worm or a hole for a worm for the apple, my mom's like, you just cut that out. You just cut that out. There's a perfectly good apple. You're not going to waste your money on this perfectly, that I bought you, this perfectly good apple. You know what I mean? But there's another part of that whole test where it's like hygiene-y. Like, you have, like, yeah, you're at a restaurant.
Your hygiene color.
Yeah, my okay, first off, smokes. To put this in perspective, my food disgust level is extremely low at 16%. That's really, really low. And the only thing that I get freaked out a little bit about is hygiene. So it's like, if you have hair in your soup at the restaurant, are you going to still eat the soup? Yeah, I'm going to still eat the soup. But if, like, someone has wiped their butt and come out of the bathroom and then, like, handed you a piece of bread and you know they didn't wash their hands in the bathroom, I'm not eating that bread.
Yeah.
That's my issue.
That's not even your most common hygiene problem.
What's my most common hygiene
problem? When you're cooking.
I wash not my me surfaces.
Cooking. Not me. I mean, not you cooking per se, but when
my husband is cooking in my house.
When somebody's cooking with you.
I just like to wipe off all the surfaces if there's been raw meat on them. What's wrong with that? That is not creeped out. That's, like, logical.
I understand. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure everybody knows what you mean by all the surfaces. You're very safe when it comes to raw food.
My husband's a butt.
I'm a butt?
Your butt.
Is it a pork butt? Because those are the ones you got to really clean up after.
Well, we know you've eaten out a pork butt before.
Well, so have you. We shared that pork butt.
And that's what makes a happy marriage.
She believes you shouldn't be afraid to try new things because of texture.
Pogi's our dog.
Pogi is our youngest dog. And Pogi likes to eat everything.
Everything.
I think she tries to...
everything.
She doesn't care so much about eating everything. I think she's got this fascination to see what she can poop out.
That's so gross. That is not a podcast topic.
I know.
But Pogi, you know what? It's amazing because she's like, it doesn't matter the texture. What matters is the smell and the experience.
Well, hopefully the smell's not a huge factor. If we're talking eating and texture, hopefully the taste. Fantastic.
Well, you know, she's willing to try everything. I kind of admire her that way. Pokey's a good
girl. Will. She'll eat anything.
Anything. We're not going to talk about the things.
Anything she can swallow.
But let's just say that we learned that you don't leave female sanitary products.
Oh.
Anywhere in the world near this dog.
No.
Or underwear.
New or used. Oh, she'll eat the crotch out of underwear.
Crotch out of an underwear. Foam out of a stuffy.
Oh my god, she pooped that.
And tampon out of a garbage bin.
That she ate one of her stuffies and went out back and pooped out a whole new different stuffy.
She truly did. But you gotta admire her because she doesn't care about texture.
All right, baby, give us a shout out.
Hey, the music we've clipped and shortened in this podcast is awesome and is made available through the Creative Commons license. Who's that artist and what's that song?
I don't know, man.
You do know?
I do. We've been saying it. It's Summer Spleef. by Broke for Free.
And we have extra content all about living happy on the livinghappy.substack.com blog, and it's pretty awesome. And we also have a writing tips podcast called Write Better Now.
They're both awesome.
But our brand new
amazing creepy podcast is Dude No. It's like that. You gotta say it like that.
He does say it like that. It's true crime with an occasional foray into the paranormal and the macabre, and it's awesome. And finally, we have a podcast,
Loving the Strange,
which we stream live
on Carrie's Facebook and Twitter and YouTube on Fridays, but every other Friday.
Every other Friday now, because we're lazy.
So be sure to check her Facebook and Twitter for the dates when we are going to be podcasting live and making fools of ourselves.
Live.
We're going to do a Hot Wings challenge real soon.
Oh, dear God.
And that's always a good one.
Anyways, all my Twitter handles and Facebook handles and blah, blah, blah. It's either Carrie Jones Books or Carrie Jones Book. Carrie with a C-A-R-R-I-E. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share.
And be kind. Be kind to us old people.
Oh, yeah, we can't take one too.